Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is a Friday edition, Friday, June 9th, 2017, coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. And we got a show lined up for you. This segment, Dark Journalist, coming on, he's got some revelations for us. This is going to be absolutely tremendous. Just want to thank everyone for tuning in. Thanks for joining us. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for all you do for us. By the way, I'm behind on emails. My apologies. If you sent an email that necessitates a response, I apologize. It's just been rough catching up, but we'll get there. I want to thank Global Star Radio Network. Thank you so much for carrying our program. We're broadcast live there weeknight, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And of course, I want to also give a nod to Blog Talk Radio, BTR, and we also stream live on YouTube, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. By the way, this weekend, if anything does come up, as usual, we will be at the ready. We do have, and I'll make this announcement, we do have some investigations that are in various states of play, I suppose. We're going to be breaking some news over the next couple of weeks based on investigations we have done, we have superintended, or otherwise been involved with. And the investigations will be, actually, you're going to be hearing about some of those tonight, not from our viewpoint, but from others. So it's all good. We do have the globalist pedophiles, criminal, evil elements, I believe, on the run and exposing their deeds of darkness in every chance we get. And of course, the blowback is extensive when that happens. You get blowback. But of course, just some headlines, of course, grudge, dismay with respect to Theresa May in the UK, that election, of course, and just a number of other things taking place behind the scenes. The anti-Sharia rallies are taking place this weekend. Anti-pedophilia or exposing pedophilia rallies taking place.
And if we could, let's just take 1 second.
Go ahead, sir.
What's going on with the anti-Sharia marches? Because there is a few articles about this.
Yes.
Circulating the internet. And as the anti-Sharia rallies are approaching, people are already calling out, saying they have violence concerns, and that's the headline from Drudge, because there are counter protests planned in a number of venues where these anti-Sharia protests are, directly across the street or within the same block of the vicinity of the anti-Sharia rallies. And there are a number of them across the town, but there are a few that are making some more news than the others. The one of the articles on Drudge is talking about Portland. There has been a lot of the Antifa protest and, you know, socialist communism protest in Portland. They have a huge, I mean, just ask John, he'll tell you how bad that area has become. But I guess the big question is, will we see counter protest and violence? Will this escalate to violence? I believe it will in some areas, in some of these hotspot areas.
Yes, we have to keep our eyes on that. Of course, maybe the pro-Sharia elements can have some cheese with their wine or join James Comey, who needs, definitely, as Jay Sekulow points out, needs to grow up. I couldn't believe, well, I could, but sadly, the head of the most important domestic intelligence agency in our country whining yesterday in the congressional testimony. My goodness. Seriously.
Don't leave me alone in a room.
Oh, my
Trump.
Goodness. You know, somebody, give him a coloring book, will you?
There was a kind of a funny video. Somebody took a snippet of Comey's testimony and matched it up with a soundbite from the Kathy Griffin apology.
I saw that.
And at first, it kind of, I turned it on for a few seconds and I was like, oh, this is kind of stupid. Then I went back and I watched the whole thing through and it did sync up pretty good. And, what it was it made Comey, sound like it was him that was complaining about how Donald Trump broke him.
Yeah. I'm broken. Yeah, but she didn't say, Kathy Griffin did say that. But that's essentially what he telegraphed. And, it's sad when you've got an adult male, 6'8", that is reduced to a blubbering, blabbering blob of, it's sad. Look at the landscape of men today in this country. Where in the hell have all the men gone? It's amazing to me. If men in the 70s, in the 70s, if men acted in the 70s as they're acting today, they get beat up. I mean, really, it wouldn't have happened. It's incredible how we're seeing the devolution, I believe, of society and even of civility with Gillibrand. Also, when you look at and I'm sorry, but when you have congressperson, Gillibrand, for example, ripping into President Donald Trump. And this is one thing, too, Joe, that we're going to have to make sure we do show President Trump the respect he deserves by calling him president, not just Trump. Obama, that's different in my view. Obama did not earn that presidential title because he never, he never showed that he was eligible for that, despite the common fake news media stuff. But it's
that and a number of other things. Yes. The rise to the office of the presidency from the state senator from Illinois, the connections to Bill Ayers, having his political campaign started in Bill Ayers' living room.
They're all anarchists.
Scandals that have surrounded him and his background and his ties as he was going through the campaign. I mean, the birth certificate was just the icing on the cake the Manchurian candidate
You're
type
right. You're right.
Administration that he ran. But it's over. The damage is still there on the table.
And yeah, exactly. And one thing I've noticed as well, though, with respect, is you've got Senator Kirsten Gillibrand slamming President Donald Trump with colorful language, saying he's not kept his promises. But she has to go into the ghetto language-wise. Has he kept his promises? No. And then she states, F no. Of course, you fill in the F word there.
And we have
did it a couple of times.
We have Daniel List, the dark journalist, coming on.
Yep.
But real quick, I don't know if you saw the CNN got rid of the Reza Aslan.
Aslan.
After profane anti-Trump tweet. That's on Hagman Report also.
Yeah.
And then, folks, we want to bring your attention to another piece on Hagman Report. Liz Crokin.
Definitely.
Wrote an article, and she posted it on HagmanReport.com. President Trump zeroes in on elite pedophiles. And, folks, you can get that. It's right on the top of HagmanReport.com under in the news section there. And Liz Crokin, as well as Craig Sawyer, and Melissa, who's going to be with us tonight for a half hour, Honeybee on Twitter, are going to be joining us next Wednesday in Hour 3 for a round table discussion on where the Pedogate investigation is, as well as any other up-to-date or important breaks in that story.
Liz Crokin, by the way, is like the Energizer Rabbit investigator. She is an investigative Energizer Rabbit with respect to Pentagate, the larger aspects of Pentagate, Pizzagate, Wiener, all of those people. And her work is to be respected, I believe. So please, you're right, Joe. Make sure everyone, please, go to HagmanReport.com. This is exclusive by Liz to the Hagman Report, HagmanReport.com, for Liz Crokin's latest piece. Following the show, I'm going to be sending out on my social networking feed as well, and I believe the Hagman Report has it on theirs, but please spread it around. Please do that. Lift up Liz Crokin in terms of her visibility, and the subject is important as well. We need to keep pounding on the subject. And by the way, we have never felt, I have never seen so much, and Joe can tell you, we have never gotten so much blowback by any one specific topic than Pedogate, Pizzagate, and even and especially by the Christians. Josh Peck is going to be talking about that in part as well. This is a show you're not going to want to miss. Also, other people call, you know, conservatives calling Pizzagate, Pedogate, fake news. And I'll come right out and name her, you know, the serial stalker for that reference by Sean Hannity in that term. Those are his words, not mine. But I agree with him, Debbie Schlussel. Solution, whatever, the movie reviewer slash attorney slash everyone's a plagiarist person. Yeah. Boy, I'm sure I'll be hearing about this now. I'll see a process server on my... It's like coming to the studio.
Well, let's...
Line them up. Line up the process servers. Go ahead. I'm not afraid.
Well, let's bring on our guest. With us, we have Daniel List, darkjournalist.com. Daniel's been a guest on our show a few times before, and we're going to talk about a number of things from current events and what's in the news to...
Notice how Joe keeps me on track.
Well, I just looked at the clock. We're already 11 minutes in.
Oh, okay, yes.
And our guest has been standing by, so I want to make sure we give him the time.
Rude of us.
Daniel, welcome back to the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Hey, it's great to be back, guys.
It's great to have you back. I was just listening again to your last appearance. It's always a pleasure to have you. Brother, we took enough of your time. And by the way, if we can do this, folks, Global Star Radio, if we can just not have the bottom of the hour break, let's give Daniel List the entire segment. Let's,
sure.
So the network break. Thank you so much, Global Star, for allowing us to blow through that. Daniel, fire away, sir.
That's great. Thank you. You know, first, I have to congratulate both of you guys because when I was on last, we were talking about the FBI director that Trump was going to appoint, and I was making the point that he was not going to be a deep state operator, so I got that right. But you guys made the point that it could be Chris Christie, which I thought was very interesting, and Christopher Wray is Chris Christie's guy. So you're right on the money.
I think that was more Joe than me. I was leaning toward Johnson, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting how that...
I'm not even sure he was your preference, but you seem to be like, you know, maybe, I think it was Joe. But I thought that was interesting because, you know, Ray represented Christie in Bridgegate. And going through this guy's resume is very interesting because he has a lot of deep connections, but he doesn't have anything overt to aerospace, the deeper military intelligence stuff, which means he's not a deep state inside player on that deep level that's giving Trump so much of a hard time. So I think that's a big plus on this guy. I also think the New York tie-in is good for Trump because when things get rough and they try to create this phony impression that President Trump is involved with President Putin of Russia, they're going to need somebody at FBI who's not compromised. And this guy does fit the bill. He's that New York insider. He knows that New York crowd. And he did actually serve under Bush as assistant attorney general in a criminal division. So he certainly has the chops.
Yeah, indeed he does. And it's going to be interesting to see how the confirmation works out, the approval process, the acceptance as well. So it's going to be great to see. Hopefully, this will be a very productive appointment, and we'll see what happens. Wow, good stuff, my friend. Well, you've got some information. Just start wherever you want to start.
One last thing I'll mention about sure. this kind of new lieutenant coming in to the FBI, a Trump lieutenant. Trump really, you know, the people who helped President Trump get into office here during the election and once he was in, really stabilizing the ship, I listed them off as Hannity, Alex Jones, Bill O'Reilly, and Steve Bannon. And interestingly enough, each one of these people have really been through the ringer. For big time newscasters like Hannity and O'Reilly, okay, it's Fox News, but, you know, O'Reilly bounced out completely. I'm sure all the same allegations about O'Reilly were out there 10 years ago and didn't mean anything to the people then. But, you know, it was very easy to oust him because they really figured, you know, we can't have any pro-Trump stuff going on. So the deep state moves on the media are hardcore. Alex Jones, a custody case with his wife, his personal life gets exposed. You know, they're really pushing on that. So O'Reilly out, Hannity, they try to pull most of his advertisers, which I found was interesting because, you know, he basically, his big sin was saying that there was something to the Seth Rich investigation and that there's a lot more to it and it was suppressed, and that's a big no-no. So that leaves us with Bannon, who we know was outmaneuvered a couple of months ago, and they set up clashes with Ivanka's husband there. So we certainly we have an unusual thing, which is like a chess match going on here, where they're trying to get at Trump, and what they need to do is remove the pawns, you know, remove the bishops, and finally get at the queen, and then they can get right into Trump. And this is what they're doing. They're picking off his lieutenants. This guy, I think, is supposed to stop the bleeding in that department.
That would be good. Hopefully he can do just that. Daniel, I'd like to add our names to the list of, although we are not in the same league, of course, as those you have mentioned, with perhaps the exception of Alex Jones. Mm-hmm. Going back to what you said, you know, we have been experiencing, of course, we're fighting legal battles, multi-million dollar lawsuits. Mm-hmm. We're fighting harassment of our sponsors. We're fighting harassment every single day. And we're fighting, I'll just call them serial stalkers, and mm-hmm. just, you know, disinformation. So it's much like Alex Jones, for example, who you mentioned, in one respect, the laying everything all out, and some of it misinformation and taken out of context. That's, we're seeing that up close and personal. We're mm-hmm. seeing the sponsorship stuff, much like Sean Hannity. Of course, he's got the deeper pockets, obviously, than we do. The reason I bring all of this up is it seems like the playbook is the players are really doubling down and really increasing their efforts. And my brother, I just hope, you know, and I pray for your protection as well, because I know you're a big target out there as well. So we need to stick together in this time and fight off these evil minions of these morons.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I'm really glad you pointed this out because, you know, it works like this. Whenever there's a pattern going on top, that is in the mainstream, then it works into the alternative. They have to operate both at the same time. So if you see it going on in this mainstream field, then you look to the alternative, and who are they targeting in alternative? And if you find yourself having those problems, you know, they work on multiple levels. They go right from the top. In terms of viewership, you know, a sponsorship and all the rest of it. So they might be working all the way from something like Fox News down to radio, you know, because that's how they control the narrative. Because it's an interesting thing. I remember, you know, when I worked, and I worked for the Wall Street Journal, there was this whole thing about certain news could come out on local stations, like Denver could get certain news, Chicago could get certain news. But when it came up to a national level, like a New York Times or a Wall Street Journal, there was a choke point in between. So if there was something that they didn't want to get out, the media would coordinate, and they would make sure that none of those channels that came out, none of the newspapers and media avenues that came out nationally would carry it all at the same time. So, you know, and I've seen this whenever they didn't want certain types of evidence to get out, for example, in a case, or if there was a, you know, a strange report that came up about advanced technology and there was a court case that was local, you would find at the national level those points would get choked off. So these guys, they're always working top to bottom. This is the way that they operate in the alternative media to block these things from coming up. So I think it's a crucial point what you just mentioned. When you see it happening with like a Hannity or something, you know one of us is next.
Yeah, exactly. And it's even though, and I have to point this out, for example, in the case of Lawfare, or in the case of a lawsuit, for example, even though the plaintiff may not prevail on the merits because there are no merits, it's a vexatious suit, for example, that really doesn't mean much because you still have to pony up the money to defend against the lawsuit. It's not unlike television. They don't throw stuff like that out at the, you know, oh, we're not going to hear this. No, you've got to go through this whole process, and even before you get to the point where they can say, okay, well, can we throw this out or not? You're already in the hole $40,000.
Yes.
You know, I mean, so those people without support or without that money behind them or without the ability to mortgage everything they own, you know, they'll get shut down. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Right. You know, there are maneuvers to tie things up to slow down operations. This is kind of textbook how they work, and they have an unlimited budget because they're drawing in the black budget, which we can't even have Congress see, as we know. So it's very tricky. It's very tricky territory. But I think one of these things that happened on a high-low level this week was when Putin was talking to Megyn Kelly. And in the middle of that talk, you know, she was doing the whole I say Trump, you say Russia, trying to link Trump to Russia. And it was kind of a silly conversation, a lot of it. But he said something very interesting when they were pressing him on the whole Russia hack of the election. He said, well, the reason that they're saying that is because, as we know, there's a good deal of research that's been done in the United States that the Kennedy assassination was engineered by intelligence services, and they may be interested in doing the same type of thing with the same type of forces with Trump. And this comment is so electric. I can't tell you, because it reminded me of this story that the KGB and the Soviets at the time, this is 50 years ago, going back to the Kennedy assassination, they were so concerned that we were going to try to pin this on them, and of course Oswald had lived in Russia and all the rest of it, that they did their own investigation. And not a lot of people know this or comment on it because, one, it was behind the Iron Curtain, and two, people just lost track of it after the Soviet Union dissolved. But they did a very extensive investigation, and what they found was first of all, part of their research report was something that Jackie Kennedy in 1976, when she had a role as a book publisher, tried to get the rights to publish in the United States. So how important was their research? Mm. Pretty fascinating. But one of the things that they turned up was that there was a paperclip Nazi named Walter Dornberger, who we had brought over here, and he was a very advanced scientist, and he became the head of Bell Aerospace, which is also Bell Helicopter. Interestingly enough, in that report, they said, you know, well, the Oswalds lived with the Paynes, and Ruth Payne and Michael Payne in Dallas, and that's where Oswald was visiting back and forth. That's where they had the rifle and all the evidence to prove that Oswald was guilty. Well, interestingly enough, Dornberger was Michael Payne's boss. And so there was this whole thing about Dornberger being brought into the United States by the CIA under paperclip and being basically a CIA asset at Bell Helicopter. And so the fact that Payne worked for Dornberger and that Oswald was at the Payne house is something that was in the Soviet report. Now, what's fascinating about this is you fast forward 50 years, and we have Putin, who is talking you know, about the trouble with the United States, basically the deep state, without actually coming out and saying it. And he's saying, well, look, you know, they certainly, you know, it's certainly well known in America that there were intelligence forces involved in that assassination. He's hinting around, you know, you guys keep this game going of taking Russia down or hacking, you know, Russia hacked the election. You keep that meme going and you try to take Trump down. I've got this information which links the CIA and Dornberger to the Kennedy assassination. Do you really want that to come out? That's what I was getting in their conversation. It was very subtle, but it's an unusual thing, I think, for him to pick up on and spit out.
Interesting. And there was a book, The Nazi Connection to the JFK Assassination, I believe was the title. It was published back in 83, I'm fairly certain.
There. And what's interesting about that is, you know, people would think, well, here we go with really like hardcore, you know, the Nazis. Well, the Nazis would have been beaten by then, and, you know, What's the deal with that? But the truth is, the paperclip assets were all CIA people. So the CIA, you know, brought them in and they controlled their actions and their movements. So whenever we get into where would an intelligence plot have originated in Kennedy's death back 50 years ago, you know, you'd have to look to that element of the CIA that had access to people who were compromised, like these Nazis. So, you know, when you see those types of connections in that old Russian report, then you have to think to yourself, you know, why is Putin mentioning the Kennedy assassination? Let's just stop for a second. Biggest national interview that he's had, you know, in a long time. And he's facing all these issues, and he wants to talk about JFK. It struck me as very odd.
Interesting. Yeah, odd indeed. Telling. Leverage, I guess.
Leverage. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. Well, I think he also wants to indicate that the same forces are active and that, you know, what they don't want, and there's always been a Russian aspect to this, interestingly enough. But, you know, think about why we would even have tension with Russia right now. It doesn't really make any sense. David Stockman loves to point out that their entire industry is what we have in New York City. You know, that they spend in a year what we spend in 2 weeks on defense. I mean, this is not a country that's a threat. So, you know, I think when we take a look at it and we say, well, you know, we don't have to agree with everything that these different leaders do. I'm not saying that Putin is the greatest leader by any chance, a stretch of the imagination. But I think there is something to this when we say, well, you know, Putin, here's a few things that our deep state doesn't like about him. He doesn't want to opt into the global digital currency. That's a problem. He wants to create his own SWIFT transaction processing. That's a problem. Because he can go right outside of the central bank action. So these are significant things. You know, he's banning GMOs. You know, you kind of get the impression that this guy is not very high on the deep state's list because they can't do a lot of those consolidation moves with him in there and being so powerful like he is.
What's the alternative? What could possibly happen here at this point in your view? Would we? I guess that is to ask. Would we end up going head to head with them militarily? Russia, U.S., Russia.
Well, that was the plan under Clinton, who they were really pushing at that point. You know, they were telling us all that she was 10 points ahead, and you know, we all know how that turned out. She lost by over 80 electoral votes. That's a lot. So her whole plan was, you know, we can be actively engaged, and that's what the military-industrial complex wants at this point. Because I have brought this up before, but there's nuclear weapons that we have that we're modernizing, and Obama, he authorized $1 trillion for their renewal, but it wasn't received very well. Because we don't really have a Russian nuclear enemy. We don't have any nuclear enemies, really. And so if Russia's not a hot enemy, that is, you know, yes, they have nukes, okay. But renewing that whole class of weapons seems like a stretch. So then now they want to allocate another trillion on top of what Obama approved. And they need the, you know, you're going to need a real enemy for that. So I think they look at it as the deep state from this perspective. They think, well, we want Syria. That's one. And we want this Cold War 2.0 with Russia, or hot war. But whatever it is, you know, it's to weaken their position. As long as Russia's there supporting Syria, we're never going to get Syria the way that they want it.
Right.
And it's a huge problem anyway. I mean, it's starting to look like Berlin after 1945. You know, I think there's a certain point where you just stop, right? But I think what we're looking at there is Trump is the stopgap to all of this, because it's not his objective. He's an America First guy. You know, National Association of Manufacturers, those are the people. That's the end of the deep state that backed him. It's got nothing to do with expansionist. That's the whole Bush global expansionist into Iraq, you know, threatening Iran and this whole thing. You know, I think they're going to have enough issues with Iran anyway. And I don't think that when you look at the Iran situation, you know, it's anything to take lightly. That's not what I'm saying. But my point is that when they look at it, when they look at this map, they look at it the same way that the neocons looked at it. And that's what the deep state is still engaged in. They still want wars. They want wars on the ground in the Middle East. That doesn't work for America.
Okay, what I'm hearing you saying, and I'll kick it over to you, Joe, what I'm hearing you say is that the plan was with Hillary to go toe-to-toe with Russia. President Donald Trump had bought us some time, or at least threw a monkey wrench into that plan, and here we are today.
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Joe.
No, and there. I mean, I do agree that, you know, with the ending of the Cold War and the falling, collapsing of the USSR, Putin has been, he has come out of that and took the country out of that economically, mm-hmm. and the political ideology has changed in Russia, and they do seem to be on par with the same ideals we have, and Putin seems to be more of a Christian leader. In many regards than even our own leadership here in the U.S. But one area where I see, aside from the arena of politics, where we could run into problems with Russia is with these other nations. And when you talked about Russia not wanting to be part of, you know, a new world order digital currency, they also look at the U.S. and the West and their encroachment with NATO and the conflicts between North Korea, Iran, and Syria. Russia's always on the other side of that, trying to hold out, I believe. You know, one thing this New World Order can't do is they can't implement this globally, their plans, if every nation is not on board. And there are still, as much as we don't like North Korea or Iran, these are still holdouts to this New World Order agenda. And Russia always seems to side with these countries militarily.
So yes.
The one area where we could run into conflict is if we go into a war as a, you know, being the New World Order's army to force these nations into submission, then I believe we could run into some real problems with Russia militarily. But other than that, I don't see a direct engagement starting a war between the U.S. and Russia. If it does happen, I believe it would be a result of
it's
another,
already by proxy,
right?
But you're right.
I certainly hope not, for sure. And you make an excellent point, actually, which is that with the global digital currency, if everyone's not in, nobody's in. Doesn't work that way. You can't have half the world in it because of the nature of the beast. But I will tell you that there's a hidden aspect to the Russia, anti-Russia push, and it's the secret space program. Because Russia has a very advanced space program. They always have. We know that they've been big competitors with us in this department. China and India have their own space programs now, which makes things different, but Russia really is advanced. Now, the secret space program, I'll just do a quick update on this. There's the NASA hacker, Gary McKinnon, who in 2002, he was looking for UFO information in NASA. But what he found instead was even stranger. He found an off-world officer's list, and it was a fleet So just like you'd find military records for officers who were in the Navy or in the Marines, these guys operated in outer space. They weren't astronauts. They were an actual off-world officers list. And it alluded to a much bigger infrastructure in space than, you know, we're aware of publicly, that we were putting a lot more resources out there. Now, there are a lot of private resources going into space right now, you know, like Bigelow Aerospace and SpaceX and things like that. And the idea is to corner the market on asteroid mining and space tourism and things along this line. But strangely enough, the same week that Putin has his weird interview with Megyn Kelly, Bigelow from Bigelow Aerospace comes out on 60 Minutes and says there is alien life and they've been visiting here, which is a very unusual thing for a corporate CEO to say, even if he's a corporate CEO of a, you know, a mega space corporation. So I thought that was strange right off the bat. But anyway, getting back to McKinnon, he basically gave such testimony on this list that we try to extradite him from London to prosecute him for 70 years. So they really did not want his information coming out. Now, they had a defense in McKinnon's case that he has Asperger's, and so they couldn't get him out. But as it turned out, they tried multiple times. They have temporarily given up, but if he moves anywhere outside of the UK, they're going to grab him. So his information led to a lot of speculation about this, and a huge research effort was done around the secret space program. And these people found things of huge amounts of money being pumped into these space operations, all the while NASA and their budget was going down to pre-1965 levels. So there's a great discrepancy there. Now, you're familiar with the former assistant HUD secretary, Catherine Austin Fitz.
Yes, mm-hmm. And you've done a lot of programs with her as well.
Yes. Well, I always call it Solari University, because if you're going to learn things, you're going to learn it from Catherine. And, you know, having been on Wall Street and the government, she knows both. But one of the things that she points out, and I think it's very interesting, which is that there are trillions missing from the federal budget, and they're not accounted for. And, you know, the figure is officially, it is unofficially much higher, but the official figure is $6.5 trillion. She looks more around $20 trillion for what's missing from the budget. And the question is, where does it go? And, you know, there's only so many luxury homes and, you know, fancy sports cars you can buy. Where does this incredible amount of money go? And she thinks that that is where the secret space program comes in, that they are filtering a lot of this money off and building a massive infrastructure in space. And, you know, we already have suborbital platforms controlling cell phones and GPS and all that kind of stuff. So we know about a certain amount of the visible investment in space. This other side, the secret space program, is a whole different matter. And there's a lot of disinformation around it. I'm just finishing up a series called New Age Deep State. And those episodes talk a lot about this obfuscation effort. You know, and what you have is, you know, there are all these solid researchers who've done research into the numbers around the secret space program. They've talked about the government officials involved with it, et cetera. And then once in a while, these characters come out of the woodwork and say, hey, I was part of the secret space program, don't you know? And they're easy to discredit because, you know, they're just making a story up or whatever. But they're unusually marketed. Like, they get into the space and there's somebody's op. And the idea is, keep this topic of the secret space program off in somebody's loony bin. And they do a pretty good job of it, but I've done reports on the backgrounds of people who come forward like this, and strangely enough, often they don't have any background at all. It's very hard to track them down, and they literally seem like they're under mind control. So I think this is a hot area to watch, because the secret space program is something that connects to the missing trillions, and those are two areas where they just don't want you to get into it. This is where the media comes in so handy, because it's easy around this topic to point, instead of pointing to like the solid research of somebody like Fitz, they'll point to this guy who comes out and says, oh yeah, you know, I've been to Mars or in this program or whatever. And so there's that sensationalist aspect to discredit it, and people blow it off. But believe me, from the research that I've done on it, it is a real program.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, but as you describe this and as presented on your website, darkjournalist.com, this involves everything from our surveillance state currently, CERN, the black budget, as you just pointed out. I mean, all of this together is what comprises the secret space program. Is that
it does.
Correct?
Okay. Yeah. They're all different aspects of it. And one of the ways to connect them is this idea of a breakaway civilization, because the breakaway civilization idea comes from this fact that there's advanced technology that the public's not aware of, and that it's in use already. It's active and in use. Very often, like a project like CERN, you know, it's unusual. It's a little abstract for the regular guy to even imagine, you know, like, okay, they're smashing particles together for scientific experiments. Okay, whatever, big deal. But what actually happens is our solar resonance has major trouble when CERN is turned on. So that thing is so powerful that it has planetary impact when they do their experiments. It's not, you know, somebody's lab somewhere and hope for the best. This thing actually messes with the magnetic field around the entire globe. So a few other weird things about CERN. It's got a $6 billion budget. That's a defense budget. You don't get scientific projects with that kind of money behind them. Now, there are a group of concerned scientists, and I've talked to these guys. One of them's in Hawaii. And he sent letters to all these different institutes and the National Academy of Scientists, international groups, saying that that thing is very unhealthy for the Earth's gravitational field. And he took them to court, and what he found out, oddly enough, was that CERN was a sovereign entity. It's not, you know, it's like trying to sue a country.
Really? That's the first time we've heard this.
Yeah.
And we've done a lot of shows on CERN, but no one has ever spoken to the sovereignty of CERN as a political or governing body.
You're not talking just like a corporate entity. You're talking about
like the Vatican, how the Vatican is
exactly.
One country, basically.
CERN is a sovereign entity. That's what they found out when they went to sue it. And the judge said, you know, you're going to have to get them to agree, based on their own rules, to work this out in a court of international law with you, because there's no way someone can come in from the outside and sue these guys, because it's like trying to sue the country of Sweden or something. So that's a very unusual setup. So how did they get to be like this? You know, you're in the middle of Geneva, and you're this massive project, $6 billion project. You're smashing particles, and, you know, it's basically a gigantic weapons test, because if it has that much of an effect on the atmosphere when they do the tests, which is verified. I mean, there's a good deal of research showing what happens when it's turned on versus when it's not turned on. And one of the things floating around about CERN, and you guys have done some great shows on CERN, so you probably know this, but I'll say it anyway, which is they have a byproduct. There's a hazardous byproduct potential from CERN, which is called a strangelet. And, you're familiar with this. And now, I'm not saying that something like a strangelet you know, the odds of it producing the types of effects that could happen with it, which would basically be to open up a massive black hole, the odds are slim. There's no question about it. However, again, you had a group of 52 serious scientists who went to CERN and said, this is a possibility. Why aren't you addressing this? And CERN and the, you know, the group controlling CERN blew them off for a good while. And then finally they said, okay, yes, you're right. It is a potential side effect, but the odds are so slim, you know, just forget about it. Now, so they were forced in a corner by these scientists, but you see the kind of action it takes to get any kind of transparency about what that project is all about.
And absolutely. Besides, who's going to complain after that happens anyway?
Right, yeah.
that aside, very interesting, very, very informative with respect to CERN and the integration of the black budget. You're right. I mean, $6.5 billion, you are talking defense level spending. Well,
you know, when we look
that.
At the Pentagon, yeah. I forget what, over the last 15 years, over $11 trillion has gone missing. Then you have the black budgets, you know, from the one aspect is the drugs that are brought back in from Afghanistan and other places. And all this money has to go somewhere. So whether it's secret space programs or, you know, secret weapons programs or being funneled into CERN, these people, I believe, have an endless budget based on their silent backers and partners.
Yeah, but Daniel, yeah. To what end? With respect to CERN, to what end? What's the objective here? Although we've talked about it, we've gotten numerous answers to that question, but in your view, what's the objective here with CERN?
There's no question it is to get information on other dimensions. And there are people who ascribe different things for why they're doing that, and they have different reasons for why they're doing that. What I see... go ahead.
Daniel, if I could jump in real quick before I forget this. You know, a lot of people focus with CERN on how they're trying to open portals, influence and you know, retrieve information or send information to other dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wonder is how much of this is being done in order to manipulate and affect our dimension. And the reason I say that is because just look at, we'll take climate change as an example. We saw this huge blowback from all these nations over Trump pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. And let's look at the Mark of the Beast, for instance, the tribulation, the end times Mark of the Beast system. And we'll say climate change is the driver of that vehicle somehow, where they are going to, you know, implement this new economy. We'll say they're basing it on climate change or some kind of climate agreement that brings us all home. And then, you know, you have CERN there. And if CERN, I mean, what good is CERN if it's just finding other dimensions or opening portals unless there is something that is going to be done to manipulate and change our perception or this dimension, either some mock alien invasion or opening portals to...
You're talking about practical application, is what you're saying.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And, I mean, it could be the game changer. When you have everything in place, CERN can be that wild card, well, a wild card in our eyes, but the hammer that drives the nail in to this end times agenda, whatever role it plays. But everybody talks about CERN as being able to, you know, get into these other dimensions and opening portals. But I wonder what, you know, how much of those effects does it have on manipulating and changing our real time reality in this dimension?
Oh, those are great questions, actually. You make a good point, too, that when you look at CERN, you can see into it almost anything you want to because of the nature of the mystery of what it is. Here's a few facts on the ground about CERN. We talked about their budget. CERN is the biggest user of the Internet. So, you know, they use the Internet more than...
Most bandwidth, or...
Yeah, they actually, because of the amount of equations that it generates and then it has to send to different scientific institutions that are covering the data, it becomes the biggest user of the Internet, period. you would think that people in regular everyday life would be aware of it more because of the, you know, the incredible things involved with it when you think of it this way. In terms of the dimensional aspect, you know, I do think that there's an experiment to basically play with the medium. In physics, what you would do is, well, a long story short on this, in physics, the idea of you observing something changes it. So, so the idea that, you know, you hear about things like the Mandela effect and all these types of things that kick in, and people say, well, I seem to remember that differently. You know, this song from 1998, the lyrics are completely different. And I always think when that comes up, aside from the fact that people sometimes have faulty memories and I can appreciate it, but I do think that playing with the medium of reality itself could be a function of the testing that they're doing with that. And the reason I think that is because when you get into dimensional realities, you are, you know, you alter everything from the timelines and, you know, so the thinking on it gets very heavy. But I would say whatever it is, it's not just a particle smasher. And I think that that's important. And we do have smaller versions of CERN. One of them's in Long Island here in America. And they're atom smashers, too, on a much smaller level.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned how in physics sometimes the behavior of certain atoms or particles changes when they are observed. I watched a YouTube video that documented this, and it was how light reacts. I believe it was how sound reacts when it's observed. And they did the experiments, you know, when I'm not exactly sure how the method was done, but they have the videos up there, and folks can find this on YouTube by just doing a little search. And but that's fascinating to me. You know,
yes.
these elements or particles act differently when human eyes are on it versus when it
your
is.
Mama's watching.
No, it's just strange though to see it react one way, and then by the presence of humans, it reacts a completely different way, and they document it all, but they can't figure out other than, you know, it being observed why there would be those changes. And I think that does speak to the nature of our reality in some ways.
It's an excellent point, actually, making a really good point. There's, well, the guy who coined the term the breakaway civilization is Rich Dolan. And Dolan studied Cold War histories, and he studied the UFO phenomena as a result of the Cold War secrecy around it. And one of the things that he pointed out was that you, once in a while, this breakaway civilization that has, you know, advanced technology and advanced science and advanced medicine, they have to work in the open in our reality. You can't do something like CERN underground. So you have to create a pretext, basically, for this gigantic project so that everyone thinks of it as something else while right under our nose it's built for an entirely different purpose. So the breakaway civilization, rather than being this kind of, you know, mythical idea of like, oh, there's some civilization out there, this is very simple. At a certain point, a particular group that had access to advanced technology decided not to share their findings. So that, you know, the way that science works, if you and I are in there working on something and I get a breakthrough, if I don't share that with you, your level of science is going to continue down a particular line. So the breakaway civilization idea just means that there's a small elite group that would work with the higher technology. They get access to things, you know, like age extension technologies. They get access to things like advanced medicine. They understand what the secret space program's all about. And, you know, rather than setting it up as a boogeyman, I'm looking at it more as like, these are corporate guys, you know? You just think about like Jeff Bezos or Richard Branson. They like to have the edge. And so the idea of a small group that is controlling vast technology, and, you know, we get into subjects like UFOs. UFOs come up all the time in my work. Even if I wanted to ignore them, I couldn't. It's a fascinating subject. But they're always coming up because there's always a UFO aspect coming in. Where is that being generated from? You know, like, let's just temporarily leave the idea of an off-world civilization off the table. Where are all the UFOs coming from? So, you know, this idea of a breakaway civilization, I think, helps to get some answers going. If they're building a larger infrastructure in space, if there's a lot of money missing from the federal budget, you get somebody like Catherine Fitz doing investigations, and her targets are somewhere around $20 trillion for this. So that space economy is one thing, but the secret space economy, something totally different.
And I do believe, and I know many people believe this to be the case, that these space programs, that the military and or government have far more complex space programs than we believe. And I do believe a lot of the... So when we talk about UFOs, many people get in their mind about aliens from other planets.
Mm-hmm.
Never do they think of the spiritual aspects. But if you remove the spiritual aspect from many of the UFO sightings, that really only leaves, you know, governments and secret technology made by humans, or in part by humans, maybe fallen angel technology. But one thing I've noticed is you see a lot of people have been reporting a lot of strange military vehicles in the same time periods as these UFO sightings, and that's always been, you know, if you look at shows like The X-Files and throughout history,
going back forever, too.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we only have a minute left, Daniel. I just looked at the clock. any final thoughts? Anything you want to say before we let you go?
Well, since we're tripping into so many interesting subjects here, I'll mention the Phoenix Lights, then, and we'll end on that note, which is the Phoenix Lights is a good, solid UFO story for people to look up. Here is a craft that sat over Phoenix, people taking video of it, the governor himself coming forward and saying, I saw it, it was gigantic. Nobody knows what the Phoenix Lights were all about, but if we have that kind of technology, then certainly a secret space program or a breakaway civilization is very plausible. If that thing came from somewhere else, then I would say we have a rather big problem.
indeed. Folks, darkjournalist.com, subscribe to his content, become a member there now. It's a great deal. You can't beat the content and the what you just heard. This is just a sampling of what you just... I mean, it's fantastic.
And
Daniel,
thank
you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us tonight. And we will definitely have you back on in the near future. And you keep up the good work. And
we're gonna
thanks
have to,
for
like,
your time.
Clear out an entire day for him. Like,
yeah, we could do a three-hour show easily.
You guys have a great night.
Thank you, sir.
You
God
too,
bless
Daniel.
You, my friend.
All right, folks. We are up against our network break. When we come back, Melissa... The Honeybee, Melissa Zachariah, coming up after this.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right? You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greenovative.com, that's greenovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smoke.
smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com. Precious